Thank you, Ed. This is an interesting question. We polled some of our members who could not be here, and this is going to be a role reversal. The question related to the fact is that, rightfully so, we talk about a lot of issues that face general aviation, fuel, attack, preserve, etc. If you're looking forward over the next 5 years, what's the most significant opportunity for aviation? In other words, what can we be doing to enhance aviation rather than defend? You know, the comment was, we always seem to be looking at the negative sides in terms of these panels and discussions. Where are the opportunities to promote aviation, to grow aviation, or where we should be focusing our resources in the opposite direction? So I thought it was a very insightful question, because I did, when I saw it, I thought to myself, you know, he's right. We tend to address the attacks, the alternative fuels issues, and so forth. And are we, they basically want to know, are we as organizations looking for the opportunities, or are we so busy looking at the risks? Craig, do you want to start that off, or Ed?
Well, all right, we'll do it the other way since I've got the microphone this time. We're excited at NBAA. We're going to have as an opening general session speaker at our convention, Rich Karlgaard, who has been writing a lot over the past several years about how technology is allowing people to operate outside of major cities, that a company can really be successful in a smaller town or in a smaller community, and people are gravitating there because of some quality of life issues. The schools may be better. They may have more access to the mountains and camping and other things. And I think what Rich as a pilot has been talking about has been how general aviation can really facilitate that lifestyle. And I think that that's something that is really an opportunity for us, because mobility is something that's so important to us. But the quality of life opportunities, once they're understood, I think are going to be profound for us. Pete and I had an opportunity a couple of weeks ago to be in Idaho, speaking to the Idaho Business Aviation Association and a conference there, and had an opportunity to go into the backcountry airports, see the lodges up there. Just a remarkable experience, but not one that is really understood or widely enough shared. And I think some of that combination of technologies making parts of the world more available to us, and general aviation as an opportunity to expand that, particularly as we continue to see with avionics, it is becoming more intuitive to be in a cockpit. And people, as they're more comfortable with that technology, I don't think are going to look at it as, I'm afraid, I don't know what all those things are. They're going to basically say a computer and say, I use these every day. That's an opportunity for me. I'm comfortable.
So really, mobility, quality of life, and technology, you see our key opportunities.
I would say the thing I'm most excited about that we can see on the near-term horizon is the LSA. I am so excited about this. I mean, we have one manufacturer that has so many aircraft on order, and they're going to hit the training market starting in the next month. These aircraft are going to be out there. We have all of these others. Tom and I got a chance to be in Friedrichshafen earlier this year, and we're walking around the floor, and to see the excitement of this movement in Europe and countries that do not over-regulate, that allow that industry to start to flourish, it was truly exciting. We were walking around there. We were just marveling at the cool-looking airplanes that gave you goosebumps, and the excitement. You wonder what it was like back in the 1930s in this country when you had so many different designs coming out. And we have that opportunity here. Now, we have some people gunning for us. You know, we've got to do a good job with the NTSB and the FAA, because we've had some accidents in the LSA world, and there's some people out there that want to overregulate it. But we have to bring the cost of flying down. If we're going to get young people to fly, these young people, if they can drive competently and they can work a computer, they'll be able to fly, because it's so simple nowadays. The things that we're putting in aircraft as far as avionics that tell you where you are all the time and just give you this God's eye picture out there, your situational awareness is so much more. We'll be able to hook them if we can get them in that aircraft. The way to get them in there is to make it affordable to them, and that's what LSA will do for us. And so all of us are very, very excited about it, and we've got to nurture this great thing that EAA gave birth to, really, and I know all of us are committed, because if we all work together and make it happen and don't let the regulators get in the way, we can get young people back flying again and we will start growing that pilot population back. I'm very excited about that aspect of what we've got ahead.
So really the focus on light sport aircraft, sport pilot, and bringing the fun back to flying. Matt?
In our circumstance, we're brainstorming and looking at areas to grow and basically expand the helicopter industry. We're putting ourselves in the other person's shoe. What are they looking for? What do they want? What is society and the government really looking for? And it's a couple of key issues that we're trying to tag on to. Number one is economic growth. Number one is the energy situation and our reliance on foreign oil. And the other one is the healthcare system and expanding the healthcare to as many people as possible in an efficient manner. So you take those three subjects, and normal answer is, what do helicopters have to do with any of this? Take a look at the energy reliance on foreign oil. In the Gulf of Mexico right now, we've stepped forward, and we're very excited about the ADS-B initiative that we have in the Gulf of Mexico. Heretofore, most people don't realize, for the last 50 years, those 750 helicopters I told you about carrying 10,000 people back and forth every day, they cannot talk to air traffic control nor be seen by air traffic control. The altitudes that they operate at and out over the water, the Houston Center and the other facilities cannot see those aircraft or talk to them. They had to create their own infrastructure to do what they do. On an IFR day in the Gulf of Mexico, the production is cut down to 95% is lost. It basically shuts down on a bad weather day. With ADS-B, it's going to hopefully flip the switch next year. Those aircraft will be able to conduct normal IFR operations just like you do in the NAS right now. It's going to increase production tenfold, and the ability to go out farther and more efficiently in the safety increase is going to be fantastic. Air traffic control will be able to see them, talk to them. They're going to get real-time weather available to them, and communications will be consistent down to the rig. It's going to allow them to go beyond the current 150, 200-mile range that they now have because of all the issues they have to deal with this infrastructure. We'll be able to go out well beyond that and dramatically increase the production of oil and natural gas products. In terms of economic engine drivers, creating jobs, doing things for urban centers to help revitalize them, people in the New York City area were, and they still do to this day, but much more vociferously, would challenge the three heliports that are located on the island of Manhattan. Those heliports have 100,000 operations a year conducted to them. And the basic kind of mental attitude was, well, what do they do for the average citizen of the city of New York except, you know, annoy us? They asked the wrong question, because through an independent study, it was determined that the activities of those helicopters and the passengers, the corporate passengers that are in them, conducting their business, contributed $85 million a year to the city of New York through their corporate activities. EMS, healthcare, you want to expand it and get it out there. Right now, most EMS helicopters launch 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, day and night, good weather, bad weather, to places that nobody's ever been before to pick up victims and patients. They do it without an infrastructure. They don't have weather a lot of the times. They don't have communications to where they're going, and they've never been there before. What we're doing is the stimulus package that is now available, and the focus on safety, obviously, has gotten attention that we are requesting the development of a low-level dedicated IFR infrastructure for helicopters with point-in-space approaches for GPS WAS enhanced, which in theory, and the technology is there, but if properly funded and put in place, a helicopter can launch from a trauma center and go to a remote location where there is no medical care and land at that location and do that entire flight IFR, out and back. So that has the attention of the government. So what we've done is identified three areas that elected officials in the business community are looking to enhance and shown them how helicopters play a part in that and are going to enhance those abilities.
Thanks, man.
Oh, it's a great question, and it's, you know, one of the old adages about communications is, you know, you kind of get what you wish for, and if we spend all of our time talking about bad things that we don't like, we're going to get a lot of focus on that. So we talk a lot about the positive opportunities that are out there, and I'd echo what Pete said. I think the light sport aircraft is a huge opportunity for us. We want to spend more time at it at AOPA, not only to bring young people, new pilots into flying, but I think it's a great alternative for people who may want to stay flying, keep flying, who don't need the air. I would always like to be flying. I'm not always going to want my bonanza necessarily. So It's an opportunity to hold people into aviation and bring people into aviation that we have to put the spotlight on and talk about. The other area, and we're all spending time on it, that I think is a positive, and it must be worked hard, is this whole question of how do we modernize the air traffic control system. What's called Next Gen in Washington, which, by the way, I can report that everybody's for it, that you talk to on Capitol Hill, and virtually none of them know exactly what it means, but they're for it. That's why they're for it. But that doesn't necessarily mean they won't spend a lot of money on it or ask us to spend a lot of money on it. But the fact that our aircraft with the GPS systems that so many of us use today, the aircraft knows better where it is than the FAA controller does on the ground, is a situation that can't really be allowed to continue. And so as we go into something that should be positive, we want to make sure that ADS-B, which offers tremendous benefits, is adopted and is developed in a way that that serves general aviation. I do think it's a positive. I do think that technology, as was suggested, can draw more people into aviation, as long as the cost is kept in balance.
Thanks, Craig. From my perspective, the answer to that question focuses on two words, passion and fun. How do we cultivate people's passion, and how do we create it and make it fun? That's what tremendous opportunity, that's what brought people here today. It's the emotion, the passion, and you convert that to results and action. We've got time for one or two questions from the audience, if there's any questions that anybody wants to ask. Yes.
Most people in the U.S. are most familiar with surface transportation, and there's a bill, the Surface Transportation Reauthorization Act, which is being debated. And what does that have to do with aviation? Well, there is being proposed an Office of Intermodalism that's going to be managed under DOT. So obviously the needs of aviation are much different than the needs of surface transportation, which tends to be more localized. So in bringing light to the needs of a federalized and national approach to an aviation system, what are you doing to follow that initiative and make sure that there's a seat for aviation at the table?
Pete?
I can tell you from our end, we're involved with the ground transportation system in the sense that we're promoting intermodal transportation. And due to the unique capabilities of helicopters, we're actually dealing with issues of developing heliports at train stations, on highways, at rest stops, to create a national network of heliports. So we're actually trying to tie into the national ground transportation initiatives, from our standpoint.
I would also say if you look at the way DOT is structured, and having an office that works intermodal transportation is fine, it's important, but really when you look at what the priorities are for DOT and the fact that they have a very large federal agency called the FAA, our focus naturally has to be on Next Gen. Next Gen, though, has so many other elements that go and reach the airport and actually go out from the airport as far as how people get to the airport and everything else. Now, that's debatable to some of us whether that should be in there or not. But I think exactly what Craig was talking about. Our focus has to be on Next Gen because that is our piece that we've got to get right. If we get it wrong, and think about the elements that are in Next Gen, ADS-B is just one of the first steps. The next thing comes data communications. Right now, if you kind of listen to some of the plans out there, they're going to be touching our aircraft multiple times with different requirements. Each time, we just hear that cha-ching happen. And what we are working very hard to do is try to make sure that each time we have to touch our airplane to meet the requirements for Next Gen, that we get the most bang for the buck on each one, because the worst thing we can do is have aircraft parked because nobody can keep up with the pace of all the required equipment that they want going forward. So I think rightly that our focus is working with the FAA and DOT on making sure that we've got Next Gen right. And that is a very much interagency process because we have NASA, we have the Department of Homeland Security involved with it, Department of Defense, the Department of Commerce because of NOAA. So that really is a huge interagency process.
Just to wrap up quickly, intermodalism is not necessarily a new idea in Washington. You'll recall that's why we created the Department of Transportation. Lyndon Johnson felt very strongly we needed to have a coordinated intermodal transportation system. And I think some of us can debate whether or not aviation has been well served by having the FAA as part of the DOT rather than an independent agency. Nevertheless, I think we do need to be aware what is going on in other trends, because as Craig established earlier, what happens in one part simply can shift around resources in another. And I will tell you, it got a lot of attention in the aviation community when we saw that high-speed rail in the United States in our stimulus package was something that people thought might be worth $9, $13, $18 billion. We're looking at next gen, and we're worried about how to find a couple of billion dollars to do some pretty proven things for a pretty valuable air transportation system. And I think what it had said to us as an aviation community is we all need to do a lot more work talking about how we are serving the country and making a difference for people's lives and improving mobility.
Thank you, Ed. Anything else? Okay. We have time for one more question. Yes, right here. Go ahead, question back. Okay. Why don't you use the microphone here so people can hear?
I just want to ask, is the FAA missing from this panel? Because the question is FAA standing up for general aviation?
I'm glad you asked that. I was actually going to make the comment to the last question and saying that, you know, I think we're very fortunate to have Randy Babbitt as a new FAA administrator, and I think my colleagues feel the same way. He's a pilot, worked for the airlines, represented airline pilots, but he's flown all kinds of aircraft. He is a very engaging guy. He has a passion for action. He's engaged with all of us, seeking our views and perspectives on things. He's going to be here, by the way. You know, come bring a couple of friends when Tom hosts him. And I think we're fortunate. I think, you know, in the federal government, it's not unlike a company. You really need a person to be the leader of your organization. And going as good and as dedicated as an acting administrator is, the troops just don't respond the same way. So I think we're very fortunate to have a strong administrator. My perspective is that they are reaching out and they are listening to us. Sometimes, you know, the conversations are a little adversarial, but they need to know our point of view. We need to speak very directly with them. But I'm finding that they're very engaged and engaging in our issues. They come and talk to us. We go talk to them. And I wish we could get to a point, and maybe this is the direction you're headed, I wish we could get to a place where they became advocates for general aviation. I'm not sure when the budget limitations, you're going to see a big staff emerge there. But at least they take actions, I think, after listening and considering the impact they're going to have on us, our point of view, and then maybe that's at least in the near term as much as we can expect.
Let me, if I could just add something before Pete. How many of you flew into Oshkosh? Who'd you talk to when you got here? Most likely a controller, or at least listen to a controller. I think one of the most important things they do is make this event possible in a partnership. You see ATC here, you see flight service, you see a significant FAA presence, not just as an exhibitor or a communicator, but as a partner. And I can tell you, work with them on a year-round basis. They work just as hard as we do in terms of making sure this event is safe, it grows, and they approach it with how can we do it rather than how we can't do it. And if you wrote down on a piece of paper, let's just make believe Oshkosh didn't exist. You wrote down and said, we want to have this event in a little community in the Midwest, and we'll maybe have about 10,000 airplanes and tens of thousands of flight operations and about 5 miles of parking, and do it with a bunch of volunteers and do it as a partnership. Do you think that would get very far? You know, they have certain limitations, too, because they have to regulate. And partnership is a word that's difficult for them to sometimes defend in Congress when something goes wrong. Another example is what Pete talked about, the sport pilot, light sport aircraft regulations. That was a real leap of faith in terms of making sure that became a possibility. A lot of people fought hard on our behalf against sections of government outside of FAA. So I want to put it in perspective. I think FAA does a great job of advocacy that they don't get credit for, because the only time many of us talk to an FAA representative is in when, so it's like talking to a policeman, either you've been robbed or you have a speeding ticket. Pete, you had something?
I'm just going to, if I can. Just put it from our perspective, I would support your statement that our experience has been that the FAA has been unbelievably cooperative and worked with us very well. That doesn't mean they're not like any segment of society where there's you have incidents that occur, you have adversarial relationships over specific topics. But in general, the FAA and their initiatives and their avoidance of rulemaking in favor of working in a cooperative partnership have led to many, many positive things in the helicopter community. And that translates not only inside the Beltway for the overview policy issues, but the unique capabilities of helicopters when we're operating in the field. We find that the local controllers and people that we have to work with in the operating environment, both VFR and IFR, have been very, very supportive of our initiatives.